to our international roundtable. War goes lonely, security only together. We have already heard a lot today about NATO, Russia, and the war in Ukraine, and also about the role of media and culture. I'm now pleased to introduce to you Anne Wright from Hawaii, Ulla Klötzer from Finland, Yuri Shelachenko from Ukraine, and Alexei Komiko from Russia, and Andrei Hunko from Germany. My name is Christine Karch. I am co-spokesperson of the international network No to War, No to NATO, which was founded in preparation of a counter activities against the 60th anniversary summit of NATO in Strasbourg, Kiel in 2009, and has been campaigning for the delegitimation of NATO and demanding its abolition. So far, the discussions have focused little on the new challenges to the peace movement posed by the war in Ukraine, which at least in Germany has visible negative effects. I could not have imagined the racism that has broken out. It is a thing of impossibility that conductors and scientists are dismissed just because they are Russian, or even the poor children who are beaten up in the schoolyard just because they are Russian. Now I will give the floor first to Anne Wright. Anne is a retired United States Army colonel, former United States Foreign Service officer, and peace movement activist with Code Pink and Veterans for Peace. Anne is a member of the International Coordinating Committee of No to NATO. And you have the floor to tell us about the US peace movement and experience views of US and NATO policies.
Well, thank you very much, Christine. It's a pleasure to be with you all. I do live in Hawaii. However, I am in Houston, Texas right now. I first want to thank Anu for her excellent, excellent presentation about NATO and the Western Pacific and Asia. That is one of the things that I am most interested in since I do live in Hawaii. And she gave an excellent, excellent presentation on the extent of militarization in Asia and the Pacific based on the United States' huge presence in the Western Pacific and in South Korea, Japan, Okinawa, Guam, Australia. I also want to give my greetings to Norman Pesch. He and I were on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla in 2010, 12 years ago. So Norman, my best to you. Thank you. Well, the peace movement in the United States is struggling as the United States continues its warmongering in Eastern Europe now, and the huge amount of U.S. military weaponry and financial support that is being given to the continuation of a brutal, brutal war, a destruction of so much of the Ukraine. I'm sure you all during this conference have talked about the various aspects of it, of the continued NATO relentless urge to incorporate Ukraine into NATO, and that being one of the rationale that President Putin used, although it's not talked about here in the United States, and very seldom in any of the media do the media say that, yes, there were some precipitating issues that were being discussed for well over a decade, not to say that those issues are any rationale for the invasion and destruction of another country. That's just not right. But the fact that there were ways to stop an invasion by dialogue, by consensus, by actually working together to acknowledge the national security concerns of everyone that's involved. Well, here in the United States, our peace movement has had a very, very difficult time. Our warmongering country, and Anu very precisely identified all of the wars the United States has been involved in the last 20 years, is the U.S. is a warmongering country. There's just no doubt about it. And when you look at the overwhelming, like nearly 100% vote in the U.S. Congress to give another $40 billion to Ukraine, rather than saying, this has got to stop. We've got to use our influence on Ukraine, on Russia, to the extent that you can have any influence after you've done some of the things that we, the U.S. and NATO, have done to Russia, all the sanctions, all of the application of international treaties, particularly arms control treaties that were so important for a balance, a delicate balance of weaponry and armaments. You add to it the not only the Congress goes ahead and votes for another $40 billion to continue a war, making for the United States, this is $54 billion the U.S. has put into it. You have the statement by the Secretary of Defense, Austin, in late April, saying that the goal of the United States is to weaken Russia in every way that they can. And the continuation of a war is that weakening of Russia by the loss of military capabilities, of equipment and personnel. You look at the attempts that we have had in trying to have big mobilizations in the United States in various large cities, and we have had some, but they have not been massive because the information war that's going on in our media is dramatic. And it's not really a war, it's just a compounding of certain sets of facts without giving the wide view of what's going on. So we in the United States have had a very difficult time on mobilizing a lot of people to hit the streets to really put pressure on our congressional delegations. Now, I will just mention one other thing. There are some weird things that do happen during these wars, and one of them was the admission, the Freudian slip, the Freudian confession of President George W. Bush, who earlier this week in a presentation he gave at one of the major universities in the United States, he said the decision of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq was wrong. Well, he was the guy that did the Iraq. He meant to say Russia instead of Iraq, Freudian slip. So, you know, all of these people that have caused wars, that have destroyed countries, that have brutalized people, that have sent millions of people, whether it be from Afghanistan, from Iraq, from Syria, from Libya, now from Ukraine, to lives of refugees throughout the world, is horrific. And we, the peace movement of the United States, still stand for stopping these wars and holding accountable men and women that are prosecuting these wars. However, we are not being very successful. And for that, we are immensely apologetic to the world for what our country seems to be doing to it. So that's enough for me right now. And I thank you all so much for the kind invitation to be with you today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and this was really impressive. So, next speaker should be Alexei Kromyko. Unfortunately, he hasn't connected already. So, I will give the floor now to Yuri Shelyashenko from Kiev, who is directly affected by the war. Yuri is a longtime partner of the peace movement. He is executive secretary of the Ukrainian Pacifist Movement, board member of the European Bureau of Conscientious Objection to War in Brussels, member of the board of World Beyond War in the United States, lecturer and research associate, Grok University, Kiev. Now I would like, Yuri, the floor is yours. Tell us something about the crucial situation in Ukraine.
Dear friends, the role of NATO in the world affairs generally and in Russia-Ukraine conflict escalation in particular is a very sensitive and disputed issue. NATO is often described as a keeper of rule-based international order and defender of Ukraine from Russian aggression. However, NATO expansion to the east was a main cause of escalation of Russia-Ukraine conflict during the last 30 years, along with Cold War-era security strategy in Russia formed in response to NATO strategy. Of course, nor this fact, nor the war crimes on Ukrainian side doesn't apologize Russian criminal invasion to Ukraine, which caused thousands of civilian casualties and ruined peaceful life of millions of people. Russia is guilty in war of aggression, but Russia was provoked by United States and copies its hegemonic policy, instrument of which is NATO. It copies wars and military alliances of the past. All oppositions to Russia and China in challenging liberal world order and so-called European security architecture are in fact accusations in challenging global leadership of United States by the methods which United States reserved as allowable only to itself, as supposedly exceptional and sole great power. These methods practiced during decades created antagonism between the East and West, which hardly can be called security or order. And these methods prevent Ukrainian crisis from resolution. Instead of continuing the war in quest of absolute power and over profits, instead of weapons supply and economic sanctions harming welfare of the people and nature worldwide, we need to stop escalation of conflict and seek reconciliation. We need immediate ceasefire and comprehensive peace talks, seeking sustainable agreement on long-term harmonious coexistence, not only between Russia and Ukraine, but also between United States, European Union, Russia and China. Non-aligned status of Ukraine and peace deal, like envisaged in Minsk agreements, is only a first step. To achieve sustainable peace, we need to abolish war as social institution, dismantle military alliances of the past, such as North Atlantic Treaty Organization and Collective Security Treaty Organization, invest more public money and efforts into diplomacy than into the military, and prioritize development of soft powers of our societies. A book, Global Security System, Alternative to War, which you can find at the website worldbeyondwar.org/alternative, propose realistic vision how to achieve sustainable peace by demilitarizing security, managing conflicts without violence, and creating a culture of peace. We live in extraordinary time where the peace movement is facing unprecedented challenges and opportunities. On one hand, we have a culture of peace and nonviolence so developed that international law prohibits war, limits cruelty of warfare, enshrines human rights, including a right to peace and right to conscientious objection to military service. We commemorate and continue to practice nonviolent resistance to war and tyranny. Mediation and restorative justice helps us to cope with bad behavior without breaking relations and making enemies. Furthermore, basic conflict management skills are taught in schools, so almost everybody knows that you should talk instead of fighting, that win-win is better and safer than win-lose. Public imagination is almost ready to consider nonviolent society. On another hand, archaic culture of war and violence is still dominant, oppressively dominant in many countries, including mine country. We see democracies hijacked by pocket angry crowds of militant populists and war profiteers. We see economies waging war against peoples and nature, stealing lives and happiness of our generation and next generations. Instead of embracing nonviolent society, political leaders pretend that more weapons, bloodshed, and stubbornness will somehow make us safe. They seek military domination and drag the world towards the law of the jungle, where peace belongs only to great powers, and because of that, it resembles rather permanent war. Military patriotic upbringing and conscription is common evil of Russia and Ukraine, which escalated the conflict and led to the war. And it should be condemned and prohibited by international law, as well as such immoral practices as repressions against peace movement in Russia and total military mobilization of population in Ukraine with no respect to sanctity of conscience, personal choices to avoid direct or indirect participation in war. Personal conscience is an important safeguard against war, and therefore, human right to conscientious objection to military service should be fully protected, and war resistors from Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine should be welcomed as refugees in Western countries. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres recently said there are no immediate chances of a peace agreement in Ukraine, despite he wisely added that this war will not last forever. We heard different estimates of how long this war of attrition would continue. A year, 2 years, 4 years, 6 years or more. It means more fears of nuclear war, worsening food, energy, and climate crisis, more inflation and aggressive selling of war by NATO, the marketing department of the merchants of death, such as Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, and others. When Olaf Scholz announced a policy shift towards a raise in military spending, Heckler and Koch stocks momentarily tripled in price. Talking seriously about how to end the war, it is clear that those who benefit from war on all sides will not stop it without strong incentives such as popular opinion. The world needs a massive peace movement of the scale that opposed the Vietnam War in the United States and prevented nuclear war in the second half of the 20th century. People in Russia, United States, and Europe should raise millions of voices against militarism, insist on ceasefire, comprehensive peace talks, and social change towards nonviolent governance. Well-funded peace education and peace journalism are needed to build mass peace movement in the world, to give people practical knowledge of nonviolent way of life and up-to-date information on progress of peace. Wrong notion of security as a unilateral protection from harm should be exposed and denounced, because nobody can be safe without caring about safety of others. Peace is more than security. It is common security. It is dynamics of life free from violence. To build peace, we should liberate our traditions from repeating tragic mistakes such as wars. We should make our democracies and economies more open-minded, inclusive, and cooperative. Nonviolent society is possible and necessary. Let's build nonviolent global civil society together.
Thank you very much.
Recording in progress.
Now I would like to ask Ulla Klötzer And I have to tell you, you have to talk in English now, who already spoke in the discussion this morning, to say something about your activities against the requested NATO membership from Finland and your efforts for a new common security conference in 2025, 50 years after the first one. Ulla Plötzer is active in Women for Peace Finland and has also been working with the No to NATO network for years. At the NATO summit in Wales in 2014, we made a joint statement against the negotiated treaties that established Sweden and Finland as NATO host countries, besides they are so-called neutral countries. Ulla, the floor is yours.
Ja, danke, Christine. Thank you. We are not neutral countries anymore. That's a real pity. And to Yuri, I would say I would love to have millions of people on the streets, but we didn't even get 200 for the NATO protest last Sunday. But dear friends of peace, the governments of Finland and Sweden have both applied for NATO membership, hand in hand, as they say, with almost total support of all the political parties in Finland, which is a shame, also the Left Party and the Green Party. The enlargement is extremely dangerous, as so many prominent persons have stated. It adds tremendously to the nuclear threat. In the debate in the Finnish Parliament, our defense minister stated openly, and referring to nuclear weapons, that Finland will not hand over its national decisions to NATO, and that it is not necessary to set preconditions for the actual membership to take place. And he stated naively, but I can also say without proclamations, that we will not pursue any nuclear weapons on our land, blah, blah. The director of the Foreign Policy Institute was, however, very clear on this point in an interview. He said, we want to get under the nuclear umbrella, so that nuclear blackmail is not possible, meaning that Russia cannot use the nuclear weapon card to intimidate Finland. Finland's president, Niinistö, more or less confirmed this nuclear umbrella thinking in his speech in the Swedish parliament, May 17th. He quoted the words of US President Harry S. Truman, the only world leader that has ever used the atomic bomb, even twice. Truman spoke to the Congress in March 48 about the role of the US in supporting security and freedom of Europe. He said, Truman said, there are times in world history when it is far wiser to act than to hesitate. There is some risks involved in action, there always is, but there is far more risks in failure to act. So said President Niinistö with Truman's word in the Swedish parliament. Now also Russia is acting. According to news yesterday and today, Russia's Defense Minister Shoigu announces that new military bases will now be established in the western part of the country, near the Finnish border. 12 new military units and divisions will be established in western Russia by the end of this year. The western district of Russia roughly covers the European part of Russia. A new Cold War, extremely colder than the former one and extremely closer to nuclear war, has thus begun. Earlier today, Oscar Lafontaine held a brilliant speech. He has served, amongst other things, as the federal leader of the Social Democratic Party and as Minister of Finance in Germany. He talked about the era of Willy Brandt, Helmut Schmidt, and to some extent also Angela Merkel. The era of peaceful Eastern policy, sogenannte Ostpolitik. I would like to add the former Prime Minister of Sweden, Olof Palme, who obviously got killed because of his ideals. But especially I would like to remind you about the Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe, the CSCE, that was a key element of the détente process during the Cold War. Although it did not have the force of a treaty, it recognized the boundaries of post-war Europe and established a mechanism for minimizing political and military tensions between East and West. The first phase was the meeting of foreign ministers in Helsinki in 1973. Then negotiations were held in Geneva. And the third phase was the Helsinki summit in 1975. The final document was signed in Helsinki by 33 European nations, the United States and Canada. It is often called the Helsinki Agreement. In 1994, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, OSCE, was established as a successor to CSCE. In 1990, the Charter of Paris for a New Europe was published as a follow-up. A wonderful document if you read it really carefully. Finland's President Sauli Niinistö, now proudly bringing Finland and Sweden into NATO hand in hand, without any nuclear demands for being non-nuclear weapons countries, announced in spring 2021 his intention to arrange a new Helsinki summit on the 50th anniversary in 2025. He told that the idea had got a lot of support from Moscow, Washington, and Berlin. I think he even mentioned Beijing. Now, with Finland's NATO application, Russia would never attend such a summit in Helsinki. A summit is, however, urgently needed. All the things that Juri mentioned with demilitarization and peace, they will never come true if we don't have a really large conference on that, where also the NGOs would be visible. Is that something we should start pushing for to be arranged in Austria, Switzerland, or Ireland? We desperately need a new security architecture for Europe, as Oscar Lafontaine so well said in the morning, without, I say, the involvement of the US. Let's get rid of NATO and let's get US out of Europe. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ola, for your talk. Unfortunately, Alexei Gromyko hasn't attended, so we come to our last speaker, Andre Junko from Aachen. Andre is a member of the parliament of the party Die Linke and spokesman for European policy. He is a member of the parliamentarian assembly of the Council of Europe. Andre, we are curious what you tell us about the role of the EU in this war and its relationship with NATO and Russia. Andre, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Christina, and thank you all for this, I think, very successful so far and very good conference. I'm a member of the Council of Europe Parliament, but much more interesting for you is that I'm as well a member of the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly, where Ola Klotzer spoke about now. And it perfectly fits what I have to say. What is going on there. But first, let me tell that Oscar Lafontaine this morning cited Mikhail Gorbachev, the idea of a common house of Europe. This idea was presented by Mikhail Gorbachev in June 89. In the Parliamentary Assembly of Council of Europe, and I've been very active there for 10 years so far, and it's a very, very, very bad process that now, after more than 25 years of membership, Russia was kicked out or had to leave the Council of Europe, because this was the institutional formation of what is called a common ground for from Lisbon with Vladivostok on the basis of European Convention on Human Rights and other very good conventions. But I have to say as well, this process is reversing. We hear a lot of politicians in Germany in these days that all the processes we are facing now are eternal, are not reversible. And that is the reason why I want to remind that what Ulla Klötzer spoke about the success of the Helsinki summit in 75. This started in the late 60s. This started after the shameful invasion of Soviet Union in Prague, in Czechoslovakia, but nevertheless, there were people starting the initiative to have this idea, and it was on April 69 that NATO ministers agreed in the general idea of having this common security conference. The idea of common security is an idea of CSCE or later OSCD. And I think this is very necessary that we have to push now again for this idea, because the alternative, as we spoke in all of this conference, is very, very nasty. We had, and Ulla Klötzer spoke about this as well in 1990, the Charter of Paris. This was a big window of opportunity to reach this kind of common security or collective security system in Europe. And this was stopped, the window of opportunity, with NATO. Instead of this, NATO enlargement starting in 97-98, a decision by the government of Clinton, which a lot of protests by very, very important figures in US, but nevertheless, this is now what we are seeing. I would like to talk about the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly, where I'm a member of. First, I would like to, because Yuri mentioned how much is spent for diplomacy and how much is spent for military. The whole budget of the OSCE with 57 member states is more or less the same than one F-35 plane which Germany want to buy 35 of. So the whole budget is more or less about 150 million euro a year, and this is more or less the price of one of the 35 F-35 planes which our defense minister want to buy. We have, as parliamentary assembly, once in a year, we have a yearly assembly. This will be this year from 2nd to 6th of July in Birmingham, in England. And some European leftist, peace-looking members of this assembly, we started a motion there, which is more or less exactly the idea Ulla Klötzer showed us. It's a draft resolution called the title is called for a high-level conference to advance peaceful dispute settlement in a renewed European security architecture. And it is it's not directly saying a second Helsinki, but it points to the direction of the second Helsinki summit. And the central demand of this resolution is to call on participating states to establish a common agreement the modalities for a high-level conference aimed at peacefully settling territorial disputes in the OSCE region and establishing a new and inclusive European security architecture through the conclusion of a comprehensive collective security treaty based on the principle of common and indivisible security. So that's what we are aiming for. We are now in the process of collecting signatures. There are some positive feedbacks from not only from leftists, but mainly from leftists, but as well, for example, day before yesterday, the Vatican called us and very much supported the idea. It's not a natural for me, but it was very interesting, and it fits to what the Pope said some weeks ago, that it is, of course, it is a totally condemning war, totally to condemn the war of Russia on Ukraine. It's, of course, against international law, but there is a small part, that's the Western part of in the development of this war, and he said it's like the NATO is, in German speaking, belling vor Russlands Türen zu bellen. It's like dogs are shouting before the doors of Russia. So it's very interesting that the Vatican, for example, is supportive in this idea. So that's we will send on Monday to all members of the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly to understand. We have, for example, from Germany, we have 13 members and 13 substitutes. It's me and Gregor Gysi. We are member and substitute. So all in all, around 300-400 who will meet in Birmingham, and we will see and in 1 week how many feedback we get. I hope that's more than 20 out of more than 4 states, because this is a threshold to that this could be an item on the agenda in Birmingham. But that's what we can do, what I can do as being a member of this assembly. But of course, I would like to underline the big issue is that we have to change the public opinion in Germany. At the moment, it is changing. There is, at these minutes, there is in my city in Aachen, there is a demonstration against war. I cannot go there because I'm here. Of course, it's important to have protests in our countries, but one of the demands, I think, should be a new Helsinki process, a new summit like Helsinki, and this, for shame, maybe it's not in Helsinki, but maybe in Vienna or Zurich or Dublin, but that is what I wanted to report to you. Thank you very much for this brilliant conference so far.
Yeah, thank you, Andre. Before I open the floor for the public, I will give the floor back to all the panelists in the Zoom room. And before this, I will also tell you that we have the next NATO summit in June in Madrid, and the peace movements are organizing a counter summit and the weekend before, and there we also have to discuss the topic how we can go on in such a process for Helsinki 2, or however you will call this. And now the floor to Ulla.
Yes, I don't know, Andre, if you know that we have collected last year, immediately after President Niinistö announced that he would like to have this new Helsinki conference, we collected 160 organization signatures from all over the world.
Yes, NATO is also signing this.
Yes, for as a support for this conference.
Yes.
Then when we noticed that hell was coming with this NATO applications, we did it again this spring, and now we have had around 80, but 8 of them are worldwide organizations that have networks all over the world. So there is a strong support for this. If I could get your email address, I would send you these signatures, which we also brought to Pekka Haavisto 22nd of April, as it was already then certain that Finland would ask for, would apply for NATO membership. He was completely ignorant. He didn't care so much for the whole thing. And he said that Helsinki would invite, would arrange it, but it's Russia who is the problem. And when we asked what is the problem, he said that Russia doesn't want NGOs to take part, and that Russia wouldn't have the free press taking part. And when I asked Pekka, I have been vice chair under him for 4 years in the Green Party, ages ago when I was young and stupid. When I said, but Pekka, if we arrange the NGO conference completely separately from the governmental conference, we will have nothing else to do with you, but we have an NGO conference. He didn't answer my question. He didn't, because he knew that Russia would never come to Helsinki. So this is why we have to have it somewhere else. And I really hope that we can have it, because I don't see any light in the tunnel anymore. Yeah. And for Finland's part, the population is absolutely brainwashed. 80%, my own sister is pro-NATO. We can't even talk to each other anymore. So the situation in Finland is really, really, really scary. Thank you.
Thank you, Ola, for this clarification. Someone else from the panelists want to add something before I open the floor for others?
Yes, Christine, I will jump in. I just want to mention to Ola that your sister is not the only one that's brainwashed. I think we have family members, all of us have family members that totally disagree with what we think, which is there's a better way than war. Not that I don't think my sister says war is better, but the justifications that the media are using, particularly Fox News here in the United States, but even, you know, the other mainstream media, CNN, MSNBC, all of them are parroting the same line from the U.S. government. It just, I think the media war is such a challenge. And on social media, commercial media, we have really not been able to successfully break into having an alternative or a more expansive discussion about what all the issues are, even in the organizations that are Veterans for Peace, Code Pink Women for Peace, World Beyond War. There's still, even all of these big organizations are having internal challenges where we all pretty well agree war is not the answer. Now there are people chiming in saying, well, it has to be the answer now because another country invades and destroys, that line, rather than it's all got to stop now. We've got to have conferences on ceasefire. And for example, the United States, the continual pushing of all of this weaponry into Ukraine does not help. And then if you look at, there's a new New York Times article that came out yesterday that lists the percentage of gross national product that each nation is contributing to the Ukraine war. The U.S. is only fourth on the percentage of gross national product. Estonia is the highest. 0.8% of their gross national product is going into the war. Latvia has 0.7%. Poland has almost 0.5%. U.S. has 0.2. Still, it's huge because our gross national product is higher. But when you look at the amount of money that each one of these countries is pumping into this, it's really quite startling. And we are losing the war on the media front. Thank you.
Yeah,
Thank you, Anne. Nobody.
Now I'd like to add.
Yeah, you.
I'd like to add that, of course, some disappointing views may be widespread, but we can easily refer to unexpected in warmongering worldview facts to just help people to understand that reality is not white and black. For example, this propaganda of war says that only total destruction of Russia, totally military victory is possible. On the other hand, we see negotiations, even when diplomatic relations were demonstratively broken, we see still negotiations between Ukrainian and Russian negotiators, and this notion of negotiations is constantly is discussed, and journalists are asking politicians about negotiations. Politicians sometimes give hope, sometimes say no, we can negotiate only surrender of this bad people, but still some media have even a pages with news only on negotiation process, and these small details is important thing, because we have developed culture of peace which coexists with this archaic and brutal culture of war. And we can develop this culture of peace. We can develop peace journalism. We can develop peace journalism. We can more work on peace education, helping people to understand.
Okay. Thank you. Now I would open the floor. Anyone who have questions, comments?
Can I, Christina, only say to Anne?
Yeah, of course. First Ulla to Anne, and then Dieter, come over.
Very shortly. And when I said that US out of Europe, I of course meant your government, not the US people. I have admired you for such a long time. So I hope you didn't take it personally.
Thank you.
No, I didn't. In fact, I hope to see you in Madrid for No to NATO.
André, meine Frage an dich. Wie siehst du die Behandlung des Themas auf dem nächsten Bundesparteitag unserer gemeinsamen Partei?
This is a problem. He asked in German, André, about the discussion on the party meeting of the left, next one. And I think this is really interesting point, because in the left, there is divided about how to say about politics to NATO. And it's not only in Germany, the part, but we have also in other countries. Ulla told us this from Finland. I know also in Denmark it's similar, and Denmark has a special situation regarding EU militarization. And there's a referendum on 1st of June. That they will revert their non-participation in military EU missions.
and will also be part now with this, but public opinion is not completely in favor. And the peace activists are fighting to get a no to this referendum. Maybe André can also say something about this. And after André, I would give it back to all the others for the last words. André, please start.
Thank you, Christine, and thank you, Dieter, for this very important question. It's maybe to add what Christine said, it's mainly the northern left parties. They have heavy internal debates. Maybe from our point of view, the worst situation is in Finland. At least in Sweden, as far as I know, the left party is campaigning against NATO membership. In southern Europe and in France, for example, it's another picture. Mélenchon, for example, he made in his presidential campaign, he mainly called what Ulla and me did here for a high-level conference to where all the security concerns of all sides should be addressed, Russian, Ukrainian side, Baltic side, and so on and so on. So in Germany, the party program is very clear. We are for the dissolution of NATO, and instead of NATO, to have a common security system, including Russia, which is aiming for disarmament. That's our party position in the party program, and still is the party program of Die Linke. But under the pressure we have here in the media, there are growing voices that we should update or we should renew, but it means we should to be softer on NATO to change this position. I don't think it's necessary that we should change this fundamental position. Maybe we can be a bit more clever in arguing for it. For example, we very seldom mention that the institutional basis, the only one in the real world at the moment, is for a common security system, is a renewed OSCE. We should more appoint to the OSCE, but I'm very much against changing this general line. But we will have heavy debates in our party conference in June. But for me, it's very clear that we should stay critical. And I don't see a political space in Germany to have a foreign policy alignment of a left party to the SPD and the Greens. I don't think this is a strategy for the future of the left party. It should be a war critical, a military critical, and a NATO critical party in the future.
Thanks, yeah. André. I give now the floor to Ulla for the last words.
Well, I don't know anything else, but I really, really hope for this new OSCE conference, because at least in Finland, we can't mobilize any big resistance anymore. Here, the race is over, so to say. So we need really international pressure. But thank you for having got the chance to be here. And I was very impressed by Oscar Lafontaine this morning, and I will use all his arguments in the debates, if they still let any debate go on, because the press is really pro NATO and they have been very selective in the news propaganda here. But thank you all, and stay strong. Okay. We haven't lost the fight yet.
And hopefully we will meet us in Madrid.
Yeah, Yuri, hopefully.
Yuri, first you and then N.
Okay, I will finish with that thought. What a difference between peace and security? Peace is harmony. It is based on uniting all people together. And security is like protection from harm on one side, yeah? Security is purely technical notion. That's why the military don't like when we are talking about peace, and they like more discuss the security. But talking about peace, we are coming to core values of civilization. We should insist on peace. There is no possibility of real security if the West or the East will continue to pursue only own interests, only restraining ourselves and thinking about others, we can build a better global society, non-violent society. And for that end, a lot of educational work, a lot of gathering and disseminating information should be done. Let's preserve hope and knowledge for better nonviolent society.
Yeah, thank you, Yuri. And I hope we can include you via Zoom also in our protests in Madrid. And the last words for you.
Well, I wish I had some real positive words to end this on, but I don't. When we really look at, once these wars start, it takes a long time for them to get over with. And just from the US perspective, it was over 15 years for the war on Vietnam. It was over 20 years on the war on Afghanistan, over 12 years on the war of Iraq. The Russians were in Afghanistan for over 8 years. I mean, when you look at these major military movements, the tens of thousands of people that will be killed before the countries decide, okay, that's enough of the bloodshed, and yes, we will talk and we will come to an ultimate resolution on this. But tragically, the efforts of trying to prevent the initial start of a war, that part of it just still hasn't crystallized in the minds of the politicians that get us into these things. And it's all the work that we still have to keep going to try to change this paradigm, which is war instead of peace, and to convince our fellow countrymen and women to vote for people that really will stand for peaceful resolution of conflict instead of using militaries. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you all together, and hopefully we will see us soon again in the next protest, and we have to enlarge our pressure to our government, especially also in Germany, to come to a ceasefire, because I think this is very urgent, necessary, and therefore we have to do more, and we have to go back to the streets in not only hundreds, thousands and millions of people to rage this.
So now I close this session, and we will have here a break of 15 minutes, and then it's going on with the podium discussion, and I switch now in charm again. Bye-bye. Also, wir machen jetzt 15 Minuten Pause und dann kommen wir zu der letzten Podiumsdiskussion, zu der letzten Session mit Raus aus der Rüstungsspirale, Ideen zum Frieden und dann anschließend der Podiumsdiskussion.